back to the final session of the 2021 Housing Conference. During this session, we've decided to adapt a slightly different format and end with a keynote interview. So that's going to be with Rory Hearn from Maynooth University. So firstly then, by way of introduction, Dr. Rory Hearn is an assistant professor in social policy in the Department of Applied Social Studies at Maynooth University. Rory has a PhD focused primarily on political economy, urban geography, political public-private partnerships, neoliberalism, and social housing regeneration, and that's from Trinity College Dublin. Rory is an experienced social policy analyst, author, researcher, and active campaigner on issues of housing, inequality, politics, and human rights. And Rory also hosts the Reboot Republic podcast, which some of you might be aware of. In June 2020, then, Rory published his book, Housing Shock, The Irish Housing Crisis and How to Solve It, which is centered on making the case for a major shift in our housing system to provide a rights-based, affordable, environmentally sustainable, and community-orientated housing system. I actually attended that virtual launch back in June 2020 and very much enjoyed the discussion on the day between Vincent Brown, Lelani Farah, Peter McVerry, Michelle Norris, and others. So you're very welcome, Rory.
Thanks a million. Ciarán, thanks for having me today. Look forward to it.
No worries. A nice, easy start to set the context here. So what are the origins of Ireland's housing crisis?
Well, I suppose it's a really big question, and it's unfortunately we've way too short amount of time to try and actually go through the origins. And I was struck by what one of your speakers said, or contributors, I can't remember, said earlier today about the complexity of the housing issue and the housing crisis. And it is true that it is a complex question. You know, why are we here? Why are we within this crisis? And for me, the starting point, actually, and the starting point is set out in the book, is, you know, what is the crisis, and defining who is in crisis and for whom is the crisis for? And my starting point, you know, from a social policy perspective and a social justice and human rights perspective, is that it's a question of a crisis of housing need, a crisis of housing exclusion, a crisis of housing affordability, and that it's also a crisis of inequality, huge growing inequalities at the most extreme. And, you know, we've seen, and you others, yourself and others refer to it, you know, on the RTE program the other night in terms of homelessness. We're seeing at the extreme end in street homelessness, but also emergency accommodation. We see it families spending, you know, way too long in emergency accommodation, being damaged. And I know we'll come on to talk a little bit about homelessness later, which is very important. But in terms of that crisis, there is the whole issue of, you know, what is called, you know, the shortage of supply and all issues around that. And for me, it was about trying to get around, you know, what is the scale of this crisis? And the first of all, the crisis, if we look at it, extends to not just what has been referred to generation rent, but also what I refer to as generation stuck at home, who are those. And I was just looking, trying to get the latest figures there. And there is 215,000, it's almost 250,000 working adult children living at their home, living in their homes in this country. And they're not really accounted for in any of our estimations of housing need. And so I suppose my starting point is, you know, the question is, what's the origins of the crisis? Firstly, for me, the crisis, the focus of my research and study is that affordability crisis, that housing need crisis. There's lots of other issues around, you know, the private sector and issues around that, which I don't go into in too much detail. But the origins of why we're in this question of housing affordability and need, the scale of it, is ultimately because the Irish state stopped building social housing, essentially. It shifted to what is broadly called a neoliberal approach within housing policy, really from the late 1980s onwards. It withdrew local authorities' ability to borrow and build. It shifted also to the kind of market provision, the dominant market provision of housing. And the idea essentially, you know, was, it was always there now since the foundation of our state, this anti-social housing kind of viewpoint and perspective within policymakers, within the state, this idea that, you know, home ownership is the best form of citizenry. And of course, this links back to, this isn't just unique to Ireland. We look at, for example, you know, Margaret Thatcher, famously, you know, part of her, you know, free market right-wing revolution was about the individualization of housing, about, you know, the destruction of council housing as a system. And I think at its heart, we are in this crisis because the Irish state bought into that viewpoint that the market is the dominant way to provide housing and the best way. And instead, and essentially we are in that crisis, and it has taken different forms. As I said, there was the shift to, you know, away from local authorities in the late 1980s. Then in the 1990s, we had the promotion of, you know, credit, the promotion of home ownership, the tax breaks. And then, in the, of course, in the late 2000s, from 2008, after the crash, we had the austerity cuts, which ultimately, as I describe it, kind of put the nail in the coffin of social housing. And we had a lost decade of building. And I think there's not enough acknowledgement of that kind of role. And while it's very welcome to see that shift back, or shift, you know, the re-embracing, I hope, and it seems to be amongst policy and government and consensus that we need to build back social housing, I think there's not enough acknowledgement of the extent to which the market dominant idea still affects us. And if we look, of course, more recently, post the crash, we have the emergence of what is called financialization and the whole role of global investors coming in, buying up land, buying up apartments. And in that way, the crisis that we're in now is a different situation than the 1970s, the 1980s, the 1990s. And the idea of just promoting home ownership through policies that were promoted in the past is not the same. Homeowners can't compete with these global investors. And I think, therefore, why we're in this crisis is essentially that the Irish state never, and of course, you know, different periods, it built public housing like the 1970s. But really, since the 1970s, we have moved away from that viewpoint of the state being responsible to ensure people had housing on a broad level. And the other thing I think that why we're in this crisis is because we have never embraced the right to housing, the human right to housing, as kind of the overarching sort of principles and values for what our housing system should deliver. And we still, of course, are in lack that. And just to finish, I put centrally within my book as well the crisis, the environmental crisis, the climate crisis. Because for me, the crisis that we're in is also one of an environmental planetary crisis. And part of the, I think, how we can get out of this housing crisis is by also addressing that environmental crisis as well, and that climate crisis. And that's kind of a key idea I've developed as well.
Yes, you bring up a good question there. Rory, to what extent is Ireland unique in following that trend towards a neoliberal approach to housing, and then the consequences of that?
Well, we're not unique. You know, if we look at the two kind of countries which are we have followed most closely to, are the UK, England, Britain, the different parts of it, most extreme in England, and the US. We are closest to their models of housing, that shift to the reliance on the private market, the shift to, you know, the reduction in the role of the state. And if we look at what's interesting is that the two countries in particular, which is Ireland and the UK, that have promoted the idea of home ownership and say their policies are about home ownership, have both had the largest collapses of home ownership over the last 20 years. And in part that is because we've embraced the same market policies, and also increasingly as well, our rental sectors are where we have this generation rent being stuck paying hugely unaffordable rents. Our rental sectors are largely unregulated in contrast to other countries. So we can see there's other countries similar to us, but then importantly, there's other countries that are not in the same scale of crisis that we are in. And if we look at those countries are like Denmark, you know, Sweden, Austria, the Netherlands. And when we look at what is the fundamental difference between how we approach housing and how they approach housing, and it is a number of aspects. And one of the key ones is the continued supply of public housing in the broadest sense. And in Ireland, of course, we have a very restricted understanding and eligibility for public and social housing to those on very low incomes. Whereas in countries like the Netherlands and Austria, essentially anybody can access and live in public and social housing. And during the crisis period of the 2000s, they continued to build and put out social housing. They also have, for example, cooperatives. They have their housing associations. And importantly, they have this idea of cost rental housing, which is that being currently developed in Ireland. And I'll come on to my kind of questions about that later on. But they do have that sector. And if we look at, for example, you know, the Netherlands, they've almost a third of their housing. Similar in Austria, a third of their housing, total housing stock, is public housing. In Ireland, just 9% of our stock is public housing. And so I think that while there is comparisons, we there is differences as well across countries, quite important differences. But the other similarity between what's happening across the world is two trends. One of them is that what I refer to as that financialization process, the way in which global capital, global funds, wealth funds are now have turned over the last decade to housing, to real estate, to residential, the residential sector, particularly the build-to-rent sector, as a key source of investment. And what, and because the globe, we are globalized to these capital flows, what it has meant is that across the world, wherever there is housing systems that global finance can access it, they are in there buying up property, pushing up prices, locking out, increasingly locking out people from affordable housing. So we see this trend of financialization globally, but also we're seeing the rise in homelessness globally as well. And particularly in Europe, we're seeing an astronomical increase in homelessness. But again, not in every country. And we all know that there's one country in particular, Finland, that has actually reduced homelessness. And it's very important to point that out. But there are trends which are similar in other countries that are similar to what's going on in Ireland as well. We're not unique. But I have described Ireland as quite an extreme example of what is called that neoliberal financialized housing model. And of course, we see that in our extreme levels of homelessness, of housing exclusion, and particularly things like generation rent and housing stress.
Yeah, you touched on a few topics there that we'll get into in a minute. But from your perspective, then, what are the key choices which now face policymakers in addressing the ongoing housing crisis?
Well, I think that's a really good question because it is a question of choices. And I think that's really, really important always. Housing policy, as with health policy and education policy, you know, what you want to achieve depends on what choices you make. And it's not like that this housing crisis is some natural phenomenon. It's something that we have absolute control over. The type of housing system that we have determines the housing outcomes. And so therefore, it is about choices and it is about political will. And if we look at a number of the choices that face government currently and policymakers, I think there's a couple of key ones. The first key one, I think, is the extent to which we really embrace the cost rental housing model. I think, and it's really welcome to see the consensus amongst policy and politics and government to roll out this model. But I think it's fair to say that there has also been hesitancy, that there's been, it hasn't been quick enough, and it's not on scale. And that's why I asked the minister earlier in terms of targets for cost rental housing delivery. So I think there's a real choice about, do we tokenistically implement a cost rental model with a few pilots here and there? Or do we actually really go and offer a real solution to this, to our housing system in the long term, and be building what we should be, which is at least 5,000 cost rental units per year very quickly? And so that's one choice, because to get to there, you need to move mountains in many ways, within institutions, within opening up finance, within policy, within government, to get to that. And that requires treading on a few toes and getting things moving. And that is required. I think that's a key choice. Another key choice is around how we treat the private rental sector, which in a way reflects how we treat housing as a whole, the housing system. Are we going to continue let it just be a commodity, a kind of wealth accumulating asset for those who can afford to invest in it? Or is it a home? And I think we face a very clear choice about, are we going to put in place the protections that make the private rental sector a home? Currently, we have, I calculated, in or around about 150,000 children go to school in Ireland, in primary school, who live in the private rental sector. They and their families live in an utter state of insecurity as to whether the landlord decides to evict them, whether they have to move. I think that is utterly, utterly unacceptable in a housing system, which should be and is supposedly about delivering people a home. So I think we have to put in place measures, and that choice is, do you put in place measures like extending bans on evictions, removing the ability to evict on sale, and removing ability of no-fault evictions, you know, putting in place lifetime leases? You need to make that choice. Another choice is about, are we taking the right to housing seriously? And that, of course, is an overall question of, is the choice going to be made to pursue a referendum around the right to housing or not? And I think that's really important that that progresses. I think other choices include, for example, the issue of affordability. And what do we mean by affordability? Because at the moment, the affordability approach is one which is linked directly to the market and market value. And I think that's a flawed approach, because we are currently essentially policy. And it was said earlier today, and it's said explicitly within policy, that it is about incentivizing the private sector to supply. It's about encouraging the market. And to do that, essentially what you're trying to do is maintain and increase house prices so that it becomes viable for the private sector to build. So essentially you're accepting that policy, housing policy, is actually about making housing more unaffordable. And I think that's a choice about, do we approach affordability as a way in which we incentivize the market, as way in which we is linked to the market price, is about maintaining the current market approach and unaffordable housing system? Or do we take a different approach? And do we actually say, no, providing affordable housing is about making the housing system overall actually genuinely affordable? And that, of course, means the state needs to build and ensure the building via other forms like cooperatives and housing associations, affordable housing. So I think there are some of the choices that face us, and there's many, many others. The other one, sorry, which relates back to the idea of treating home as a commodity, or treating housing and the residential sector as a commodity or a home, is the whole question of vacant properties and derelict buildings, which blight our urban centres. And we have just seen new legislation been brought in European cities like Berlin and Barcelona, and like, for example, the use it or lose it clause. And I think we really need to move, and that choice is there. You can address a big issue of a contribution to supply of the huge amount of vacant and derelict properties by taxing those properties, by offering the use it or lose it clause, by compulsory purchasing them. You can make a very strong intervention into that, or you can just leave it continue as we are.
You've already touched on this very briefly, but why is it important to challenge what you describe as the normalization of homelessness and housing distress?
Yeah, this is something that I feel very strongly about. And I know, anybody who is in housing, you know, feels similarly. We know that homelessness is, you know, it's one of the most destructive experiences that can happen to anybody in our current societies. Homelessness, you know, tears away the absolute dignity of individuals. It causes lasting traumatic psychological damage on those affected. And it's often, you know, I find it, speaking public about homelessness can be actually quite upsetting, because it is incredible to me that we have normalized homelessness, that it's just accepted that we have thousands of families in emergency accommodation, and their children, that we've hundreds of individuals sleeping in tents in our city. And, you know, we could say Ireland, again, isn't unique in this. But we have allowed a level of normalization creep in. And why I think that's so important that we challenge it is because if we don't, then we will see this continued level of destruction of human beings ongoing. And the policy system isn't put under the pressure, and the state and the government isn't put under the pressure that is needed to actually solve it. And so we don't have an ambition to end homelessness. We don't have a strategy to end homelessness. We have piecemeal responses. We have an emergency accommodation response rather than an actual home and supports response. And that's why I think it's absolutely fundamental that we do not accept any level of homelessness as somehow normal or as somehow acceptable.
Yeah, why then do you think, I suppose it ties into that question, that the Constitution should be amended to include a right to housing, and what would that mean in practice?
Yeah, this is, I think, something that, again, was very welcome to see in the programme for government, that a commitment to a referendum, which has since been clarified, that is a referendum on the right to housing, which is great to see. And it is, I think it's so important, and I actually a little bit concerned, more than a little bit, but concerned that it is going to be and appears to be being put into the Housing Commission, which is a different role. It has a longer term viewpoint and an approach in trying to figure out an overall approach to our housing system. And whereas the right to housing, if that goes in there, to me is going to be delayed and essentially is probably not going to be implemented, which would be a very deep disappointment, because there has been growing consensus and agreement. And the Irish Human Rights Commission, for example, did an opinion poll 3 years ago and one again this year, which showed the majority of people in Ireland across all social classes and age groups agree with putting the right to housing in the Constitution. So there is momentum for this. There is support for it. Groups like that I'm involved with, the Home for Good Coalition, which involves Mercy Law and others, have made the case for it and put out a wording. We are moving to a point at which we could have a referendum as soon as is possible post-COVID, I believe, on the right to housing, and that's necessary. And why it's necessary is because, on the one hand, we have a problem with our constitution, which sets out very strong protections for the right to private property. And that is the guiding policy in how courts approach issues of conflict over housing and land, and the question of how our policy at government. And so I'll give you an example. Just recently, when there was a number of amendments proposed to the government's introduction of rental changes to the rent in response to COVID measures, and there was this was prior to our current lockdown, there was the ban on evictions was only in place for as long as the 5 kilometer limit was put in place. Other opposition parties, and I would have agreed with this, and NGOs said it should be put in place for longer, for 6 months. But the minister cited the constitution as an obstacle, because a longer ban on evictions would potentially go against the constitutional right to private property of landlords. And we know that there's an issue as well. There's a number of pieces of legislation. For example, the removal of the ability to evict a tenant on sale is questionable under the constitution. So therefore, I think there's very clear blockages to policy that is urgently needed, that is coming from the lack of a right to housing in the Constitution. And so I and others are proposing that we have a balancing right on that right to private property that sets out clearly an obligation on the state to ensure that everybody has access to, as we as a state have signed up to already at the United Nations, for adequate housing. Everybody would have access to adequate housing, which means housing that is secure, that is of quality, that is affordable. And it's about ensuring not that everybody gets a key of a house tomorrow from the state, but that the housing system delivers that for everybody in lots of forms. And I think really that the constitutional change is so important, because we need some paradigm shift. We need some major dramatic change that says from the top, our state, our policy, and our public and society is bought into this major change that is needed in our housing, and that housing, access to housing, is put as a cornerstone of what this republic does and guarantees for its citizens.
So I've read Housing Shock, and I looked at your scenarios, the dystopian scenario and then the alternative scenario. Some might argue that the alternative vision that you have for housing is idealistic, and that when you're in government, there's realpolitik required. So to what extent is your vision grounded in realism?
Well, I think the vision that I set out, which is one whereby we don't have homelessness, where, you know, everybody's housing needs are met, where everyone has, you know, affordable housing, decent quality housing, housing that is environmentally sustainable, that is within communities, that people have security of tenure. I don't think they're idealistic from where we are right now, but I don't think at a really macro level they're somehow completely utopian, because we know that there's countries like Austria that deliver this already. So it's not something that is unattainable or is somehow not possible. And indeed, we did it in the past ourselves. You know, in this country, we've ensured everybody has had access to proper housing. And indeed, in the 1950s and 60s, Ireland was commended for its provision of housing. We made it a cornerstone of our, you know, new state in the 20th century. We have done it before. We can do it again. I don't see it as overly utopian. I do see it as idealistic. Yes, I absolutely accept that. And your question of the realpolitik, and that comes back to your very good question on choices. Real politics means you make choices. And the question is, for me, whose interests do you prioritize? And I think that this change does require putting the interests of those renters, all those people who are young adults who are living at home, the future generation renters who are going to be going into pension age and potentially going into homelessness. It means putting our environment, our communities, before the interests of global finance, before the interests of, you know, people who treat housing as an asset. So I think there's some radical changes needed, but we can do them. And so, for example, you know, those taxing vacant properties, or, for example, putting in place a serious land tax that would open up land banks, or, for example, rolling out what I say is needed, which is the state building 20,000 public homes, mixing of affordable purchase, cost rental, and social housing. That requires major work, policy, and changes, putting in place the right to housing in the Constitution. They are big decisions. They are major changes. But I think they're absolutely necessary if we want to ensure our housing system meets the human right, which is a basic necessity to a home, a decent quality home for everyone. I think that's what we need to do.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time, Rory. You might direct us to your preferred retail outlet for Housing Shock. Where would you recommend people to purchase your book from?
Thanks, Ciarán. Great to get the plug in for it. Okay. Well, people can go to Policy Press, which is the publisher. Their website, they sell it off that. It's available there. They can also go to, I know there's a number of bookshops in Ireland, the Gutter Bookshop, Books Upstairs, Hodges Figgis, and there's a number of bookshops in Cork, I think in Limerick as well, O'Mahony's in Limerick, which are selling it as well. People can get it there.
Great. Thanks very much again for your time, Rory, and for your insight.
Thank you so much for having me.
No worries at all. That concludes then today's housing conference and brings the day to a close. So I'd like to thank all our delegates in attendance and all our speakers throughout the day. A big thank you also goes to Fidelma and Beecham's for supporting the event. I would also like to thank the OLIS events backroom team working behind the scenes on the logistics of today. So that's Linda, Fiona, Gareth, Richard, Paul, Ashley, Sharon, Gillian and Olivia. Takes quite a lot of work to make one of these virtual conferences happen. So thank you again. All presentations then will be made available to download after today, and we would appreciate it if you filled in the feedback form, which will be sent to all delegates. There will be an email sent with a link to both. Also, if you're interested in receiving a copy of the Housing magazine, please get in touch and we'll happily post them out. But for now, Garda Míle Maigiv, Slán agus Balat.